Welcome back. In my last lecture, I talked about the different trajectories toward agriculture in Mesoamerica, as opposed to those that we find in the old world. A variety of different ways in which we can compare farming systems in North America and South America with those in Europe, Asia, and Africa. What's striking in the New World is first the relative late appearance of food crops, with what appears at this point to be the earliest domesticated plant, gourds used as containers. Beyond that, with the food crop, the primary cereal crop at least, corn or maize, we see a transformation of this crop from a wild grass called teosinte to domesticated corn. And this transformation may or may not have been fully under human control. It may simply be, at least in part, a spontaneous genetic mutation. As well, the very small size of the earliest domesticated corn would probably imply quite low yield, quite low productivity for this crop, which may in part have resulted in the relatively late appearance of permanent settlement in Mesoamerica. The relatively gradual increase in population densities. And compared to many areas of the old world, a relatively late first appearance of evidence for social stratification. However, as I said, evidence of social hierarchy, cultural elaboration occurs in different parts of Mesoamerica by the late second millennium BC. The most spectacular manifestation of these processes is what's known as the Olmec culture or Olmec horizon. Particularly, it's found in the tropical forests along the Gulf of Mexico between about 1300 and 300 BC. Note, in the tropical forest. I'll come back to that. The uncertainty in designation, whether we call this the Olmec culture, which implies an integrated social and political and cultural system, or whether we call it a horizon, which for archaeologists only implies similar artifacts appearing over a region at about the same time, that uncertainty mirrors the various kinds of debates that have attended Olmec archaeology since Olmec artifacts were first recognized as belonging to a very early Mesoamerican cultural tradition in the 1920s. Much of this controversy, many of these debates, originated in the context in which Olmec and related artifacts were discovered on Mesoamerican archaeological sites, the circumstances in which they were uncovered. Among the first recognized Olmec artifacts discovered were the colossal stone heads found at a number of sites in Veracruz State, near the Gulf of Mexico. And thus, in this region, generally accepted as the heartland of Olmec culture, as well as these colossal stone heads, other artifacts in a distinctive Olmec art style, very distinctive Olmec art style, were also found on a number of these sites, particularly the centers of San Lorenzo and La Venta. And these are the archaeological sites in the Olmec heartland around which much archaeological debate revolves. Of these sites, San Lorenzo, or as it's often called, San Lorenzo Tenochtitlan, was occupied between about 1200 BC and 900 BC, after which it seems to have been more or less abandoned for centuries throughout the rest of the Olmec period, while La Venta, the other major Olmec center, was occupied between about 900 BC and 400 BC. And there we have most of the time period that we associate with Olmec culture. It's difficult to say why there's this succession in major occupation on the two sites, because at this point, we really can't detect any major interruption in the progression, in the development of Olmec culture over these time periods. It's not as if Olmec culture changes dramatically at the time when San Lorenzo seems to be abandoned and occupation seems to more or less begin, or at least major occupation seems to more or less begin at La Venta. Now, there was relatively little archaeological work done in this Olmec heartland in Veracruz through most of the mid-late 20th century. Through the 20th century, most of the Olmec material found in archaeological sites came from other parts of Mesoamerica, especially in the Valley of Mexico and in Oaxaca, at places like San Jose Molote and Tlatilco, as I mentioned last time. Archaeologists assumed that all of these discoveries of Olmec artifacts, none of the colossal stone heads, those are only found in the Olmec heartland, but other artifacts, either seeming to come directly from Olmec territory or in Olmec art styles, archaeologists assumed that all of these discoveries originated in the Olmec heartland, in Veracruz, and that they presumably reached these other areas in both highland and lowland Mesoamerica through, possibly, the conquest of these areas and their incorporation into an Olmec empire, or the adoption or copying of a very prestigious Olmec cultural style by developing local elites. Now, there is no evidence that the communities in the Olmec heartland in Veracruz ever had the ability to impose themselves militarily over other parts of Mesoamerica, as we've seen, for example, in Uruk, Mesopotamia, but more generally, the ability to project military power at a long distance to conquer areas far away was probably quite rare among those early states. It would develop in later times, but this is not a pattern of interaction that we tend to associate with the earliest states in these particular regions. It seems rather more likely then that these Olmec cultural elements were adopted by elites in other parts of Mesoamerica. However, the process does seem to have been complicated. At one point, Mesoamerican researchers, archaeologists, sometimes saw Olmec as a sort of Mesoamerican mother culture. And that was the term used, the original source, if you like, of all Mesoamerican elite culture was to be found with the Olmec. Indeed, in some cases, we see artifact types described as Olmec when, in fact, they appear in other parts of Mesoamerica long before they're actually found in the Olmec heartland along the Gulf of Mexico in Veracruz. But this really was an influential concept, that Olmec were the fountainhead, the ultimate origins of monumental architecture, statehood, rare and precious and elite architectural styles, artifact styles through all of Mesoamerica, and all came from this Olmec mother culture. But the actual discoveries, the archaeological discoveries, indicate that that's not true. Rather, it appears that there existed a widespread and shared culture of elite display in Mesoamerica. During the late 2nd and early 1st millennia BC, and developing through the 1st millennium AD, from at least the Valley of Mexico in the north to Oaxaca and on to Guatemala in the southeast. This involved, among other things, a complex network of trade and exchange relations between communities taking part in this network. A whole variety of rare and valuable items being moved around. Magnetite mirrors from Oaxaca. Jade and serpentine. Serpentine is a stone of quite different origins that sometimes resembles jade in this and other areas. Jade and serpentine from Guatemala. Figurines and distinctive fine pottery from Veracruz and so on. If we wanted an analogy to this situation, some in other areas of the world, we might look, for example, to the widespread distribution of Longshan cultural elements in central China, which encompassed a variety of different ethnic groups and which seemed to have provided a sort of cultural template for elite rule. The difference in the Longshan case in China is that we have a better understanding of how Longshan culture developed and spread through time. In the larger Mesoamerican case, Olmec culture would only in part be associated with the distinctive cultural tradition that appeared and flourished for centuries along the coast of the Gulf of Mexico. This wider distribution of artifacts, of practices, of architecture, found over much larger areas of Mesoamerica, from, as I said, the Valley of Mexico to Oaxaca and further south. This would reflect a common heritage of elite behavior widely shared among the growing agricultural settlements in this part of Mesoamerica, these developing agricultural communities. This would serve to articulate commercial and political relations between these communities, as well as representing power, authority, and connections to exotic and distant places. Elite power and authority and connections, representing these things to those commoners living within these communities. All this being said, this wider distribution of cultural elements, of material culture, all that being said, the Olmec heartland in Veracruz certainly was one of the most important areas within this larger sphere of elite interaction. The Olmec was not the sole mother culture for all of Mesoamerica, for all later developments among states in Mesoamerica. But the sophistication and inventiveness of Olmec architectural styles, of Olmec ideologies and ceremony and religion, was certainly extremely significant over a large area where leaders and traders were in frequent contact. Olmec was not the origins of everything, was not the origins of statehood in Mesoamerica, but it was at the same time an extraordinarily important region within this broadly developing system of elite display and elite rule. The colossal Olmec heads, found at large ceremonial centers in the Olmec heartland, like San Lorenzo, between, as I said, 1200 and 900 BC, and La Venta, between approximately 900 and 400 BC, are among the most famous and recognizable of Mesoamerican artifacts throughout the entire period of Mesoamerican civilization. The largest of these colossal heads are about 3 meters or 10 feet tall and weighs up to 20 tons. Extraordinarily, the stone from which these are quarried, from which these are formed, would have had to have been brought in from more than 50 miles away. So you can think of these people bringing in stones weighing more than 20 tons in order to be carved in place. These colossal heads seem to be depictions of individuals. They seem to be individual faces, presumably powerful men in Olmec society, possibly some form of ruler. And their headdresses indicate that they're represented as players in the Mesoamerican ball game. It's interesting, when my students see photographs of these colossal heads, they always identify them as football players because of the very particular kind of headdress that's associated with them. And indeed, this is a fairly accurate evaluation of what they're wearing. This Mesoamerican ball game was an important activity in later Mesoamerican society. From the Olmec period, it would continue to be important for the inhabitants of Teotihuacan in the Valley of Mexico, for the Maya people, for the Aztec. It served as a sporting event, certainly, probably for the most part an elite sporting event. It served to some extent, in some areas at least, as a substitute for warfare, and it served as a metaphor for a variety of religious and mythical beliefs. In fact, the Mesoamerican ball game was to some degree, in some areas, a form of ritual, a form, if you like, of worship itself. We're going to encounter the Mesoamerican ball game again in later lectures. But I want to note the importance of finding evidence, finding the earliest evidence of this central Mesoamerican cultural practice on Olmec sites. The arrangements of platforms and pyramids and plazas on these sites, sites like La Venta, San Lorenzo, as well as at Laguna de los Cerros, another Olmec center, more or less contemporary with San Lorenzo, between about 1200 and 900 BC, and possibly under the control of San Lorenzo. Places like Laguna de los Cerros, no colossal heads were found there, but the monumental architecture of these sites, the pyramids and plazas, make them extremely impressive monuments. It's not clear whether at least some of the structures at Laguna de los Cerros do not post-date the Olmec period, but at the same time, at these sites we see some of the earliest large-scale monumental architecture in the New World. The monumental architecture, the mounds and plazas and so on at these sites, is made of earth. It's not stone architecture, as would be the case in succeeding periods and in other cultures. However, we can still say, we can estimate that the scale of the structures at these sites would imply the labor of thousands of people for substantial periods of time. These are major centers. And on these sites, besides this monumental architecture, these plazas and pyramids and mounds of earth, we also see monumental stone artwork, including the colossal heads. And this monumental stone artwork is one of the most striking elements in Olmec culture. To this point, we know of 17 of colossal heads from San Lorenzo and La Venta. There are a whole variety of carved stelae and other sculptures, especially from La Venta, and probably dating from the latter part of the Olmec period. We have the massive offerings found at La Venta as well, and these are quite extraordinary. These massive offerings are meticulous deposits of carefully worked serpentine blocks found under the mounds and plazas in the central ceremonial area of the site at La Venta. These monumental offerings, these massive offerings, contain between 50 and 200 tons of serpentine, probably brought from sources in west central Mexico, some 200 kilometers or 120 miles away. An extraordinary amount of labor involved in transporting these many tons of serpentine to La Venta. And it appears that many of these objects, including the massive offerings, were deliberately buried as soon as they were constructed, as soon as they were laid out. Presumably, in a ritual destruction of wealth that would exhibit to the world the power and riches of members of the elite. This is behavior that we've seen in other areas of the world. The sense that one is so rich, that one's so powerful, that one can make use of the labor, the back-breaking labor of common people to generate extraordinary monuments and then cover them up, place them out of sight. In this sense, this would be akin to the fantastically rich graves that I talked about in Ur, for example, or perhaps even the pyramids themselves. Ways of displaying to this world and the next both one's piousness and one's power, and while at the same time, presumably, overawing common people and probably also competing leaders as well. The architecture and monumental artwork at these Olmec centers certainly demonstrate the existence of an active and energetic and probably driven population of workers. These are not, however, specifically urban centers. People may have lived on these sites. In fact, it's almost certain that some people did live on them. But to this point, there's relatively little evidence for residential areas directly on the site at San Lorenzo, La Venta, or Laguna de los Cerros. The hinterlands, the areas surrounding San Lorenzo and La Venta, where some archaeological survey work has been undertaken, probably supported populations of between 10,000 and 20,000 people, but over the area as a whole, living in elite and commoner hamlets and satellite villages. There is some limited evidence for a three-level settlement hierarchy in these areas. But we're now dealing with a settlement system that looks rather different than those that we've encountered in many other areas of, for example, the Old World. Here we have monumental architecture, a huge monumental and ceremonial centers at San Lorenzo and La Venta and Laguna de los Cerros. We have evidence for the mobilization of people in back-breaking labor in order to produce massive offerings, to produce monumental artwork. Certainly we have socio-political hierarchy, people who command other people to do these things. But we don't seem to have urbanism. We can't think of San Lorenzo and La Venta necessarily as towns. These are considerably smaller populations around these ceremonial centers than the regional population estimates that we've seen in many other areas that we've already examined. I mean, if we look at the estimated populations around San Lorenzo and La Venta in the hinterland around the area, these are only equivalent to some of the urban centers, the actual urban units that we've already examined in different parts of the Old World. And they're actually significantly smaller than, just to give one example, the early dynastic cities of southern Mesopotamia. So on the one hand, we have very impressive monuments, very impressive artwork in this Olmec area, but we have much smaller populations. This may in part be due to the environments in this area of Mexico. These sites are on raised areas surrounded, as I noted at the beginning, by tropical forest. A quite different situation than in, for example, the Nile Valley or along the Niger or the Yangtze, where seasonal floodplains and irrigation were extremely significant. The swidden or slash-and-burn agriculture. This is something that I spoke about earlier when I was talking about Southeast Asia. The swidden agriculture in this area may well have been characteristic of the Olmec heartland in prehistory. and would probably only have supported lower population densities than many of the other areas we've looked at. The sparse available evidence indicates that Olmec farmers grew corn, possibly manioc, and that some villages may have exploited the marine resources of the Gulf of Mexico. But we have to think about the potential consequences of relatively smaller populations for the growth of social hierarchy and political centralization in the area. One other problem with states that appear in tropical forest environments is the relatively very poor preservation of archaeological materials that we find in these places and in these areas. This, in part, but only in part, explains our lack of evidence of Olmec non-ceremonial, non-elite life. These issues, relatively small population densities, relatively little data on areas beyond the ceremonial centers, play out in debates about the nature of political systems in Olmec territory. Many archaeologists see the Olmec as having built the first states in Mesoamerica, possibly territorial states, with their capitals successively at San Lorenzo and La Venta, at least. Other researchers see little evidence for elaborate state systems, and especially state bureaucracies in these areas, or for urbanism, and so would call Olmec political systems chiefdoms. Obviously, the small population sizes, or at least relatively small population sizes, in and around the Olmec centers would play a role here as well. Can we have all of the elaboration of a full-fledged state with these small populations? I would not necessarily call these Olmec political units chiefdoms. Olmec rulers were evidently able to deploy massive amounts of labor, and these rulers themselves seem to have been the subjects of much of the iconography, much of the artwork on these sites. We may be talking about relatively small, undifferentiated, and possibly unstable states, but they should probably be seen as states nonetheless. By analogy with later Mesoamerican civilization, Olmec artwork indicates that rule was vested in individuals with privileged access to the supernatural, sometimes called shaman kings. This would be a common element in later ideological justifications for Mesoamerican kingship more widely across the area. Olmec may not have been a mother culture to the rest of Mesoamerica, but there's no doubt that it was a central regional influence in the development of this broader Mesoamerican civilization, which, by analogy with the Mesopotamian case, for example, was defined by a more or less common set of cultural ideas, a widespread set of assumptions about how the world worked, or should work at least, and a set of shared practices and institutions across a major part of the Mesoamerican world. When we meet next, we'll examine how this civilization manifested itself in later societies in different parts of Mesoamerica, and first in the great city in the Valley of Mexico of Teotihuacan. Thank you.